The date is May 19th, 1989, and we're watching Roadhouse. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One. This is the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Wade Garrett to my James Dalton.
You're damn straight, I am the best. Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
I was hoping you would call me Mijo.
Yeah, Mijo. With zero Mexican accent.
Yeah. Well, you have to have that Sam Elliott drawl for that one. So this week, we're looking back at May 1989 when the movies in theaters were The Return of Swamp Thing, See No Evil, Hear No Evil, Happy Together, The Rainbow, and of course, our movie for today, Roadhouse, which earned $30.1 million on a $15 million budget. I have to laugh because that's not the greatest box office that there could be, and this movie was a flop. But I have to think part of it is because a week after it came out, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade came in and probably just shit all over any chances this movie had of maintaining a second week box office.
Well, 1989 would have been a big year, right? When was Batman was released? Somewhere around there as well. So
yeah.
That would have been a big...
I'd say it was probably June.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just a reminder, just like you do not want to eat the big white mint while you're at the urinal, you also do not want to spoil this movie for yourself, and there will be spoilers ahead, so if you haven't seen this movie, please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, once again, I've found multiples on this one. The first one, which I think is the actual official tagline, lives like a loner, fights like a professional, and loves like there's no tomorrow.
Accurate, I would say.
Second, which I think might have been for the video release, it's last call for action. And there's an ellipses there, last call, ... for action, with an exclamation point at the end. But I feel like that's a video cover tagline.
I feel like that sounds more like a tagline for a Schwarzenegger movie than a Swayze.
Yeah, or a Van Damme.
Yeah.
So these last two, I've got two more. I found them on posters on Pinterest. So they may be fan-made, but I enjoyed them. One of them was, be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Well, that's one of the rules, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, one of the rules is be nice at all costs. Absolutely. My personal favorite, though, and I don't know if this is fan-made, but it's a good one. The dancing's over. Now it's time to get dirty. Just riding that Patrick Swayze wave of popularity in the 80s.
I was trying to think where is this is post Dirty Dancing, right?
Yeah, Dirty Dancing's 87.
How long after? 87? Okay.
Yeah. It's 1 year. And it's funny because I read a whole bunch of things about the fact that Patrick Swayze was a problem on set because the women were crowding the set trying to get a look at Patrick Swayze. So his fan base, he was like a fucking beetle out there. So everyone just wanted to go get a peek at the Swayze.
Nice.
Oh, well, see, and also before this would have been Red Dawn. Red Dawn would have been a few years before this. So that's an action movie. But anyway, those may not be the best descriptions for this movie. So let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
All right, here we go. When the man known as Dalton is approached by bar owner Frank Tilghman with a proposition to help him turn his struggling roadside bar around, the coolest cooler in the business of nightclub security packs his bags and heads from New York City to Jasper, Missouri to bring some stability and his personal brand of law and order to the patrons of the Double Deuce. Once he arrives in Jasper, Dalton teaches his security staff the value of treating people with kindness until you have to kick their asses, falls in love with the local doctor, and runs afoul of local businessman Brad Wesley. Will Wesley's war against Dalton and the Deuce destroy the entire town? Will anyone escape without getting their throat ripped out? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Nice. So we're at episode 32 now on our show, which, I mean, that's something to be proud of. But we have encountered a first. This is a movie that I have never seen. And I know I was a little unsure about Mortal Kombat. I'm pretty sure I saw Mortal Kombat. This is the one I know for sure. I've never seen a second of. But thanks to Family Guy, I know what Roadhouse is. But for you, Colin, you were the one that was familiar with this movie. What's your history with Roadhouse?
I have no familiarity with this movie. I've also never seen it.
Oh, shit! Okay.
But I think it was one of those movies. There's like a handful of movies that I suggested to you that we should do because they were basically like classic movies that I have wanted to watch but wouldn't watch without reason. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They're ones that I'm like, oh, I should get around to watching that eventually. It's like Family Guy reference it all the time, and lots of other pop culture shows reference it all the time. But at the same time, it's always Roadhouse has always kind of been a movie that I've looked at and been like, I don't know. It's 80s. It's Patrick Swayze, who I don't really know anything about. Like, I only actually watched Dirty Dancing for the first time as well, maybe 3 years ago. So,
yeah. Well, I found it funny that the night that I was watching Roadhouse, I was texting with my girlfriend and she was watching Ghost the same night.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess we had this Patrick Swayze telepathic connection that night or something.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then this is the first real mistake we've made on I Used to Like This One, because this is one that we have never actually seen, I guess. So this is going to be a little bit unusual, but fun, I think, exploring this movie that we don't know. But someone used to like this one. So we can at least go on the knowledge that, hey, Peter Griffin used to like this one.
There you go.
Yeah. I did read that there is also a 2003 off-Broadway play that was made based on this movie. The title was Roadhouse, the stage version of the cinema classic that starred Patrick Swayze, except this one stars Tay-Mac from the 80s cult classic The Last Dragon wearing a blonde mullet wig. That's the whole title of the play.
That's a very descriptive tagline, I guess.
Well, alrighty, here we go. Let's jump into Roadhouse, directed by Rowdy Harrington, which I find incredibly appropriate that it's directed by a guy named Rowdy.
Mm-hmm.
He was a director on A Murder of Crows, Striking Distance, Bobby Jones, Stroke of Genius, Gladiator, but like the James Marshall Cuba Gooding Jr. boxing flick. Produced by Joel Silver, who we've talked about with both Lethal Weapon and Demolition Man, also a producer on The Matrix, Veronica Mars, Sherlock Holmes, the Robert Downey Jr. ones, Swordfish, Exit Wounds, the DMX Steven Seagal classic Exit Wounds.
That's actually really interesting that you mentioned that, because there's a lot of... When did Lethal Weapon come out? After this?
The first one was 88, 87?
Okay.
So the first one was before this for sure.
Okay, I was going to say that I find Dalton and Martin Riggs very similar.
Yeah, I could see that. It's written by R. Lance Hill. I've never understood the initial as a first name, what people do. But he's writing as David Lee Henry for some reason. He only has 6 total writing credits, this and characters on the sequel, plus Harry Tracy, Desperado, Out for Justice, more Seagal, 8 Million Ways to Die, and the only one written under his real name is The Evil That Men Do. It's also written by Hilary Hankin, who also has a short list, only 7 for her, Wag the Dog, Romeo is Bleeding, Fatal Beauty, Blue Heaven, Prisoners, and Heading for Broadway, but she gets no based on credit for the sequel. I don't understand what that's about. But we open on a bar called Bandstand. There are fancy cars in the parking lot, hot ladies in tight club wear, and a super cheesy guy in a bolo tie. This, we will soon find out, is Frank Tillman, with an unnecessary G-H in the spelling of his name, T-I-L-G-H-M-A-N, played by Kevin Teague, who also has a G-H in his name, T-I-G-H-E.
Maybe he just did that so it felt natural.
Well, I've got a possible reason coming up, so
okay.
I'll get there. He's in another 48 hours, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, 6 episodes of Lost, and a lot of episodes of the 70s show Emergency, with an exclamation point, plus an animated Emergency spinoff called Emergency Plus 4, where he's the same character, but he's a firefighter instead of a paramedic.
Hmm.
I don't know. But it ran concurrent with the live action series. But just, what is this like Dick Wolf of the 70s? Is this Emergency series? Is this like having the Chicago Fire, PD, and Med all together? Or, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I was when you first mentioned it, I was like, I was trying to think if there was a modern day one. There's that
911 has
911 with Rob Lowe, and well, that's the spin-off.
Got two of those. Yeah, one with Jennifer Love Hewitt and one with Rob Lowe.
Yeah,
yeah.
What was the Third Watch? Was that the one that had all three of?
Oh, I don't
like all three of the different emergency response.
Maybe, yeah. I think that might have been what it was called. I never watched it, but
I'm trying to remember. There's just so many of those shows.
Well, this Frank Tillman guy enters the bar, and we sort of follow him around for a bit through the crowd. Inside the bar, there is a live band playing. Interestingly, the lead singer of this band is also the lead singer of the band at the Titty Twister in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
A fight breaks out, and we get to meet our hero for the movie, James Dalton, even though we never actually hear his first name. It's only on his medical files. But this is Patrick Swayze. He's the Swayziest. He's from Dirty Dancing, Ghost, Point Break, Fatherhood, Red Dawn, To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. And, of course, special connection for us in Edmonton, the terrible Christmas in Wonderland movie. Have you ever seen Christmas in Wonderland?
I've never seen it, but a funny story I have is that while it was filming, I happened to be in West End, and I ran into Chris Kattan in some store.
Oh, okay.
And I felt like I didn't talk to him. I just kind of saw him, and I was like, "Oh, that's Chris Kattan." But I was like, I didn't want to be that guy, because it's also like Chris. It's also Chris Kattan, and I wasn't really. I couldn't think of like, what do I? I know who you are, but I don't know anything about you.
Night at the Roxbury. You would have come in like just bobbing your head to the side. What is love, Chris Kattan?
But it was funny because I could also tell that I was the only one who knew who he was. And he had this air about him, like he was trying to get in and out quick because he's like, oh, I don't want someone to recognize me. So then I was also just kind of like, well, I don't want to burst your bubble here and, I don't know, bring a crowd around you or something.
I'm wondering about this store, though. Like, because for some reason, Chris Kattan, I feel like you saw him in Spencer's Gifts.
No, it was like a cologne, like perfume store. Which, oh, okay. I didn't even know why I was in there. I must have been with somebody. But yeah, it was one of those types of stores.
So a fight breaks out in the bar, and Dalton steps in when this fight is a little too much for the bouncers and politely says, "I think it's time for you gentlemen to leave." The drunken patron, of course, pulls a knife, because that's what happens in this movie. And Dalton gets slashed in the arm. Then he really gets ballsy, proclaiming, "I've always wanted to try you. I think I can take you." So Dalton simply says, "Outside," but it turns out it's just a clever way of getting them out of the bar, because he actually has no intention of finishing this fight, just getting rid of them.
Yeah.
And so we cut to Dalton in the back room, sewing up his own arm wound. Frank Tillman comes in and tries to recruit him.
Hold on. Sewing up his own wound without cleaning it or applying any sort of antiseptic.
Yeah, because he's tough.
so tough that he can just flex off disease. I don't know.
Frank Tillman comes in and tries to recruit him to work at his own bar, the Double Deuce. "I need someone to help clean the place up. I need the best." And so Dalton agrees to do it under the conditions of $5,000 up front and $500 a night cash. "You pay all medical expenses, and I run the show completely." And then to make this character even more enigmatic, he says he'll get there when he gets there. He doesn't fly. It's too dangerous. With the deal made, Frank is out of there, but not before saying a line that gets used multiple times in the movie. "I thought you'd be bigger." That could have been the tagline of the movie.
Yeah, that could have been the tagline. It's also funny because I too thought he would be bigger.
Yeah.
Throughout this movie, I was often kind of astonished at how small Patrick Swayze is, especially compared to the action heroes of that decade.
Yeah.
But he still pulls off being a tough guy really, really well.
Yeah. It's the mullet.
Yeah.
He quits. He's out of there, off to his new endeavor, and he drives home. And when he gets there, tosses the keys for his car to a homeless guy who says, "I'm not a valet." And he says, "Keep it." And then, so I must say, as a first-time viewer, I was so confused. I'm like, who is this guy? But then we watch as he pulls the sheet off his Mercedes with a bunch of glamour shots of the vehicle. And you think this is where I'm going to drop sponsorship corner, but I'm holding on to that one for a bit more. He drives to Jasper, Missouri, and to the Double Deuce Bar, which is definitely a very different bar than the one we just saw. The kind of tough rural bar that has a cage around the stage to prevent things being thrown at the musicians. And we see the main Double Deuce musician, Cody, playing on stage, who is played by the legendary Jeff Healey in his debut performance, who only has 3 total acting credits, and one of them is for his Angel Eyes music video. The other is an episode of a show called Jake's Progress in 1995.
Hmm.
But Dalton casually walks around the place, sizing it up to see what kind of task is ahead of him, and he meets the waitress, Carrie Ann, who is played by Kathleen Wilhoit, who was in The Edge, Color of Night, and a whole ton of TV with recurring roles on ER and Gilmore Girls. This is a tough place, and Carrie is a tough broad. I do love the shot in the bar we get of Frank changing some graffiti on the wall from "for a good fuck call" to "for a good Buick." I'm like, that's some skilled work right there, changing that one.
Yeah.
This guy was changing the F's into A's on his report cards when he was in school. Cody takes a break from singing so they can drain the main vein. I'm wondering whether this is a term that I always heard when I was in school. I'm wondering if this is the movie that created the term, or at least brought it to the mainstream.
Yeah.
Of drain the main vein. Dalton approaches the stage to talk to Cody, and it turns out he knows him, and they bro out for a moment. And once the band starts up again and Dalton's observations continue, we definitely see that his reputation precedes him as employees start to figure out who this guy is. Everyone is talking about Dalton. The story is, you fuck with him and he'll seal your fate. I don't understand this world. Why is he so legendary?
I know, I was trying to think about that too. In a world pre-internet, how does his legend spread so far and wide?
Yeah.
That, like, and even Wade, like, how would people know these bouncers? Like, how did they become so huge and well-known? Is the bar scene across America in the 80s that connected?
Right? I mean, I know you did security for a while. Like, was there ever any one of those guys where it's like, oh my god, that's Henderson. You gotta watch out for Henderson. He's a badass. Everyone knows who Henderson is.
Not that I know. I mean, people used to call me Smiley, so maybe that reputation made its way around the mall. But
so we get to witness so many more questionable moments on top of the drug dealing and the sheer number of fights, such as, here's one of those questionable moments. The one guy who is told he can kiss some woman's breasts for $20.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's sitting there and feeling the woman up. And he's like, well, are you going to kiss them or what? Well, I don't have $20, he says with a smile. And he's like, what the fuck is going on in this bar? But this feeling up moment creates like a whole Rube Goldberg chain of events that all stem from this moment. This whole bar brawl just breaks out. So, after this night of observation and checking in with Frank, the next day, Dalton buys a new car. New in quotation marks, because it's actually a beater. He also buys a new set of tires. And again, I'm sitting there, I'm like, well, he's got his Mercedes. Why is he buying a new car? What's going on in this movie?
Yeah.
So, but in his old car, he drives to a farm where he's looking for a room to rent. And the room is in a barn loft. And the owner of the farm is the very cool old man named Emmett, who is played by, he gets even cooler, his name is Sunshine Parker.
Nice.
He was in Tremors, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Oh God, Book 2, Kiss my grits. You have to say it like that. Kiss my grits. I don't know what that movie is, but I wanted to be able to say kiss my grits. It's funny, though, looking down his credit list, here's a selection of the character names he's had over the years. Old Codger, Derelict, Moonshiner, Vagrant, Hobo, Old Drunkard, Old Geezer. This is really like the Pope and Sister Act. This is really another example of finding your niche.
Yeah. He got typecast early and he just kind of stuck with it.
Yeah. So Emmett is surprised that Dalton wants this place with no TV and no AC because he's had multiple people look at it and no one has ever been interested. We then see that the neighbor across the pond, or is it a lake? How big is that body of water?
I thought it was a river.
Is it a river? Okay, see, I thought it was a pond or a lake.
I'm trying to think. Maybe it is. I don't know why I thought it was a river, but you might be right.
Well, this guy across the lake, I guess, then, has a helicopter, and this is where the local rich guy, Brad Wesley, lives, and the helicopter buzzes the farm a bit, and Emmett says, "I swear he does that just to piss me off." But my favorite line is when Dalton, who has been very polite in calling him sir the whole time, finally says it one too many times for Emmett, and Emmett says, "Calling me sir is like putting an elevator in an outhouse. It just don't belong."
He's not wrong. Also, how would that even work if it, I mean, I guess that's his point, but.
Yeah, see, I always thought the saying when it came to outhouses was something about a double-decker outhouse.
Hmm.
That's the one he should have used. It's like a double-decker outhouse. That top floor just don't belong or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut to a meeting that Dalton is running with the employees of the Double Deuce. And he says, this is the new Double Deuce. And what he says goes. And he fires one guy, Morgan, because he doesn't have the right temperament to be a bouncer, and fires someone else for drug dealing. He's cleaning house.
It's funny, Morgan during the that initial bar brawl, I was really impressed because he did this, like, military press, throws this guy onto a group of people.
Yeah.
And I was looking at him, and I was just like, man, I know that guy. I swear he's a wrestler. And then the more I looked at him, I realized that's Terry Funk. He was, like, one of the most legendary hardcore wrestlers there is.
Nice.
He used to do, like, death matches and stuff in Japan and he was in the WWE for a little while. I'm pretty sure he's one of those guys who's still wrestling, even though he's got to be 80-something years old.
Yeah.
But it was weird to see him because in this movie, he's really thick and jacked.
Yeah.
And I've only ever seen him in kind of like the late 90s, early 2000s, when, like I said, he was still pretty old, yeah. Old then. And he was just looked like a geriatric old man. So it was kind of crazy to see him look like a formidable wrestler.
Yeah. It's like the nature boy Ric Flair. It's like, maybe it's time you drop boy from your name.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So yes, Dalton is cleaning house. He's cleaning roadhouse. On his way out, Morgan threatens Dalton, saying he's a dead man, and he's not bothered by this, and continues with his orientation meeting. And he says, anyone else here dealing? Okay, well, it's my way or the highway. If anyone wants to walk, do it now. But he has three lessons for them. Number one, never underestimate your opponent. Expect the unexpected. Number two, always try to take it outside. Never start it in the bar unless it's absolutely necessary. And three, be nice. If someone gets in your face and calls you a cocksucker, I want you to be nice. Ask him to walk. It's a job. It's nothing personal. Cocksucker is just two nouns prescribed to elicit a response. Like, you can see that his philosophy degree that he talks about, that he humble brags about later, is definitely in his whole theory of how to work this job.
Yeah, I loved after that when the other bouncer asks, like, well, what if he calls your mother a whore? And he's just like, is she?
Yeah. We find out that Dalton is a cooler. What is a cooler?
I'm not sure. The way they don't really ever explain it, and I should have actually looked into the term, but what I took away from it is that he's like the closer.
Yeah.
You know, in baseball, when you have
your
batting lineup or whatever, he's like the guy you want to go last to clear the bases if all bases are loaded. So I take the cooler to be kind of like if you like the team can't handle a situation,
yeah,
then he's the guy who comes in to put an end to it. So I guess it's like if the situation is hot, he's the cooler. He's the one who brings it back
there.
Down.
Okay. See, that definitely helps make me realize where the word probably came from. Yeah. So the first night with the new rules is not going well. One of the guys is letting people in without following the new procedures. Dalton also tracks that the bartender Pat is pocketing cash, and a fight breaks out, of course. And Dalton saves the bouncer Hank from getting stabbed and kicks a bunch of ass. And at the end of this abysmal first night, one guy, Steve, gets fired for fucking in a back room during his shift, and the bartender Pat gets fired for skimming the till. And Dalton ominously tells Frank that it'll get worse before it gets better.
Yeah.
And then we go outside and we see a perfect example of worse, because his new car has gotten trashed. Windshield smashed, tires slashed. Then I finally went, oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not his first rodeo.
Yeah. So seeing his car in shambles, he, I don't know, jogs home? like it looks like he just takes off jogging. But we cut to Dalton. He's back home reading in his loft, and there's a big party at the fancy house across the lake, which he watches for a bit. And then the next morning, Carrie Ann comes to visit, bringing some breakfast for Dalton and casually scoping out his naked ass. She tells him that he shouldn't have fired the bartender Pat, and he tells her he had to. I just think I'm looking at a dead man, though. Because this is where we find out that Brad Wesley kind of owns a lot of this town, and some of the people Dalton has fired also work for him or are related to him.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Brad Wesley swerving back and forth across the road in his Mustang. Why? Like, is this just like a giant dick contest that's going on right now? That it's like, this is what I can do because I'm fucking Brad Wesley.
Yeah, I mean, at some point we're going to have to just talk about, there's a real element of lawlessness throughout this entire movie.
Much.
Police come in every now and then, but they don't really seem to be doing that much.
Nope.
And Brad Wesley just seems to have the run of the town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he reminds me of like Richie Rich, where he can just do whatever he wants.
Oh, you know what he is? He's Christopher Walken in The Rundown. That's what he is.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Yeah. I was going to say, this movie, as I was watching it, it reminded me a lot of The Rundown, both those early rock movies.
Yeah.
The Rundown and Walking Tall. Yeah.
The other thing that's ridiculous about the fact that he's swerving back and forth across the road, the middle lane has rumble strips. Like, it has those, like, what are the reflector bubbles in the middle of the road. So you're driving across this back and forth. Like, do you just like hearing the is that part of the charm of swerving all across the road? But Brad Wesley is played by Ben Gazzara, who was in The Thomas Crown Affair, Big Lebowski, he was Jackie Treehorn in The Big Lebowski, and a whole shit ton of French and Italian movies. Of all the English language movies he's been in, those are literally the only two I've heard of. So now, we also know that Patrick Swayze famously died of pancreatic cancer. Interestingly, Ben Gazzara also died from pancreatic cancer. So, I don't know, was there something in the water in this movie? No? Okay.
Just seems like a sad coincidence. I would hope not. I mean, maybe we should go test the waters of Jasper, Missouri. I know there are water issues in the States, but...
Well, they actually didn't film any of this in actual Missouri. They filmed it all in Los Angeles.
Oh, I was going to be like... I was like, oh, he's going to tell me they filmed it in Flint, Michigan. And then I'm like, well, there might be something to that then.
Well, as Brad is driving carefree back and forth across the whole road, Dalton almost hits him in his car and has to swerve out of the way. When did he get his car back? Like, he left it at the bar and jogged home? Did he jog back to the bar to get his car? Because now, like, he's on his way to the auto parts store, which is, like, basically across the street from the bar. So, like, when did he get his car back?
Maybe he has his car, like, you know, in the old Adam West Batman, how sometimes he would just have vehicles stored behind a bush? And they would just pull the branches off, and they would be there, and then they'd just sort of be on their merry way.
So he arrives at the auto parts store and he meets Red Webster, the auto parts guy played by Red West, who was in Safe Haven, Glory Road, Natural Born Killers, a lot of TV. He's played someone named Red a few times in his life and apparently was part of Elvis's mafia.
Nice.
So there's a few Elvis Presley references in this movie, and part of it is also just the nod to Red here. But Red has to order a new windshield, but he does at least have an aerial in stock. Phew, get that radio working again. As Dalton leaves, we see some of Wesley's guys come in and have it hinted that apparently there's something going on between Red and Wesley as well. And even though this was my first viewing, I figured it out pretty fast. This movie is far from subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to a weird Tai Chi scene with Dalton doing Tai Chi by the lake with Wesley across the lake watching him do this, and then shakes his head and goes back in the house.
I was wondering, do you think now the whole Patrick Swayze Tai Chi martial, like the fact that he's very clear, like this kind of ends up being a martial arts movie,
yeah,
at certain points. And I wonder if this movie came out now, if they would be like, oh, it's cultural appropriation, or if they'd get any of that kind of backlash.
Yeah. Well, I read there were several different types of martial arts being used in this movie.
Yeah.
So I guess as long as we're spreading it around, it's not cultural appropriation. It's not Cobra Kai,
I guess.
But yeah, we have this weird bonkers scene in the middle of there. And then Dalton is now, we see him getting back to the Double Deuce that night, maybe. I'm not actually sure how much time is passing. But one of the fired employees, who it turns out is the nephew of Brad Wesley, the supplier of all the liquor for this bar, tries to force his way back into his job. This, of course, breaks out in another fight because Roadhouse. And a bunch of knife play. Dalton gets stabbed again. A bunch of people get beat up in this scuffle. And in the end, they all get thrown out and Dalton decides to go to the hospital for his wound. So he's not stitching up his side. I guess he's only worried about the sanitation when it comes to, like, you know, a good muscle area, like a shoulder.
Well, I think the difference is he was with the arm. It was like just a flesh wound. Like it was a cut.
Yeah.
A puncture wound's a little bit different. You have to make sure there's no like internal injuries or stuff like that.
But I think it was still a slash though.
Oh, was it?
Like, I don't think he actually like got it in the ribs or anything.
Okay.
But at the hospital, we get to meet Dr. Elizabeth Clay. She's actually only credited as Doc in the credits. She's played by Kelly Lynch, who is in Bright Lights, Big City, Cocktail, Curly Sue, Mr. Magoo, Drugstore Cowboy, Charlie's Angels, 15 episodes of the new 90210, 6 episodes of The L Word. I read that Dr. Clay could have been played by Annette Bening, but she didn't quite have chemistry with Patrick Swayze.
Hmm.
I also read that many of the character names chosen in this movie came from real people from the Old West to give it like a Western feel.
Yeah.
So the reason she's referred to only as Doc is an homage to Doc Holliday. And Wade Garrett is named after Pat Garrett, the sheriff that shot and killed Billy the Kid. Brad Wesley was named for John Wesley Hardin, a notorious cold-blooded killer who once famously shot and killed someone through his hotel wall because he was snoring too loudly.
We've all been there.
Yep. Frank Tillman was named for Bill Tillman, a lawman from Dodge City. And I guess the GH is now explained because this guy also spelt it with a GH. So that's why he had the bizarre spelling of his name.
There you go.
One of the thugs is called Younger, which references Cole Younger, another notorious bandit and killer. And finally, Emmett and Dalton both get their names from Emmett Dalton, leader of the Dalton gang. I thought that those were all like really interesting little fun facts that it's like, oh, it's subtle, it's unusual, but it's a thing. So she asks Dalton, how did this happen? And he says, natural causes. And she says, it looks like a knife wound. And he says, like I said. And she says, do you enjoy pain? And he says, pain don't hurt. Is that profound? Pain don't hurt?
I don't know. There's so many things in this movie that Dalton is the epitome of cool. You know what I mean? Like, almost every line he says, everything he does is exactly what I imagine a cool guy would do. Even the way he holds his cigarette or lets his cigarette hang from his mouth, like it's very,
yeah,
It's just, he's just one of those types of characters. And sometimes, I mean, sometimes his lines work. Like, I love his speech to the security staff at the beginning where he's giving them the rundown of these are the new rules.
Yeah.
But then there's other ones like this one where you're just kind of like,
yeah,
okay, and moving on now. Like, let's just go.
Yeah. But this is the scene where we find out that he's got a degree from NYU in philosophy. And he also carries around his medical files because it just saves time. And we get kind of a flirty moment with the doctor, and he invites her to come to the bar some night. And, you know, not very professional. But she asks, do you ever win a fight? And he says, nobody ever wins a fight. So, is this one profound then?
That one is profound. I enjoyed that one.
This one's the hit. The other one was the miss. Okay.
Yeah.
And she also compliments his shoulder stitches, which he's like, thank you. But did they switch arms?
Oh.
I could have sworn he was stitching up his right arm in the opening scene, but this was his left arm.
No, it was his left arm because he's sitting on like a table, and he's planted his arm towards the mirror, and then he's stitching with his right arm for sure.
Okay. Yeah. I also read that Kelly Lynch actually spent time in an ER to prepare for this role, and she really learned how to do stitches, but then her character uses staples. And of course, like everyone, she ends the conversation with, you know, for that line of work, I thought you'd be bigger. And he says, gee, I've never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to Bradley's mansion where one guy pulls up in a monster truck. The fuck?
Yeah. Again, this is like the Richie Rich thing. Like, in what world does a man just drive around in a monster truck?
Yeah, just for fun. Except Tackleberry in those are the later police academies, but. But Brad Wesley is pissed that his cronies got their asses handed to them at the Double Deuce and punches out O'Connor over it. So, yeah, Brad Wesley's not a nice guy. We cut to Dalton, who pulls up to the auto parts store to see a couple of Wesley's shady-looking guys leaving, and Red's store is all messed up. And he asks, were you robbed? He says, every week. Brad Wesley takes 10%. Oh, so the backstory of Brad Wesley is definitely getting a little richer now.
Mm-hmm.
Then now we cut to a bar with a G-string contest going on, and this is where we're introduced to Wade, who is the bouncer there, and this is played by Sam Elliott, who I don't think I've ever seen without his mustache until now.
I was going to say, I think he's around 40 in this movie.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've seen him sub 60.
Yeah. He's in The Man Who Killed Hitler and then The Bigfoot, a movie from 2018, a horror movie called Frogs from 1972, but a bunch of Western stuff, Tombstone, The Quick and the Dead. He was in A Star is Born, The Big Lebowski, and of course, he's the voice of Dodge Ram commercials. I know a few episodes back, you mentioned that everything should be narrated by James Earl Jones or Morgan Freeman. We can't forget Sam Elliott either with his cool Southern drawl.
100%. 100% I would listen to any audiobook narrated by Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
But it's like his would have to be like specific though. I think he would do really good at like any sort of Western novel or John Grisham maybe. But I know Sam Elliott best because a couple of years ago, for whatever reason, I was looking for something to watch on Netflix.
The Ranch.
And I got really into The Ranch.
Yeah.
And he is awesome in that show.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you would see Sam Elliott like narrating Ready Player One or something like that. I don't think that's quite.
No.
So at this bar, Wade gets a phone call from Dalton, who is choosing to make this call from a laundromat. He's doing a little digging to see if Wade has ever heard of a guy named Brad Wesley. No, he hasn't. Why? Are you having trouble? Nothing I'm not used to. But you know what, Colin? I noticed a distinct difference between this bar and the Double Deuce, and not just like the blue color palette or the naked ladies on stage. The Double Deuce seems to like to advertise Miller Lite beer, whereas Wade's bar is about Coors and Budweiser. And I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner!
Bring it home.
Yeah, the Mercedes was too easy of a launch pad for me. Because they really leaned into those glamour shots of the Mercedes.
Yeah, for sure.
But always on a lookout for product placements in movies. Here we go. Roadhouse is brought to you by Miller Lite, Coors, Michelob, Budweiser, Colt 45, and Corona Beers, Matilda Bay Wine Coolers, Drambuie, and Tia Maria Liqueurs, Ferrari, Chevrolet, Mercedes, Buick, Ford, and GMC cars, Michelin tires, Napa Auto Parts, Valvoline Motor Oil, U-Haul, Sonor, and IOT drums, Siban cymbals, Marshall amplifiers, American Express, Chaps Cologne, Cat Equipment, Marlboro Cigarettes, Eggstar Agriculture, and Pepsi Cola, and of course, the Double Deuce. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. So now we cut to a slightly cleaner Double Deuce with Carrie Ann singing with the band and no cage around the stage anymore. And one of the blonde, busty regulars, Denise, is hitting on Dalton, saying stuff like, "Why won't you look me in the eye?" And he says, "I'm shy." Because he's cool. But we'll also soon learn that this is Wesley's gal. And at this point, Brad Wesley's tough guys show up to cause problems. But the bouncers stop them at the door and drag them outside. The one guy has a blade attached to his right boot, which Dalton was clocking right from the beginning. So outside now, and stripped of his boot, it's time for a parking lot fight, because Roadhouse. The doctor shows up while this is going on, because she was intrigued enough by Dalton at the hospital. So the doctor and Dalton go for some coffee, you know, because apparently the cooler is not needed at the bar anymore.
They'll last one night without him.
The amount of times that he has bailed them out of trouble already, you know, it's like, you're going to leave for the last few hours of the bar when everyone is drunkest. You know, you're going to leave for last call. Yeah.
I also kind of feel like Dalton would just have some sort of inner sense that if something was really going wrong, it's like it would just, it's like spider sense would go off and he would just be like, "I need to leave."
His
and
mullet starts twitching.
Yeah. The hairs on his mullet would raise.
So, they go for coffee. They have a nice little date, and then she takes Dalton back to the bar to pick up his car. And his car is trashed again with a stop sign through the window. And she says, "Your fan club?" Yeah. And, of course, they kiss. And next morning, Dalton is just hanging out, lying on the hood of his car, as you do if you're as cool as James Dalton. Two of Wesley's goons come up saying they've been looking for him all morning. Mr. Wesley wants to see him. And so he follows in his car to the big house on the other side of the lake. I must say, the two pool tables in this house seems a little extravagant. Yeah. This is another case of, I've got money. I drive around in a Bigfoot, and I've got two pool tables in my front entryway, because.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, wait till later when we get a glimpse of his trophy room with a full-sized polar stuffed polar bear.
Yep. So we see Denise is a battered woman doing jazzercise, and Brad Wesley is eating breakfast. Wesley is trying to bring Dalton over to his side, but Dalton isn't having any of that shit. "You've gotten rich off the people in this town. You bet your ass I have." He's not even trying to hide it.
No.
But then Wesley decides to try, I guess, the blackmail route by saying that he has a cousin, Memphis, and he tells me that you killed a guy back there. And Dalton's backstory gets a little more interesting.
Yeah.
So Wesley tries to buy him to come work for him. And he says there's not enough money because Dalton is all integrity. So the Double Deuce is really popping now. They've got neon signs and better clients, cleaner, all that sort of stuff. It probably smells less like vomit and urine now.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I Googled it, and the population of Jasper, Missouri, around 1989, was somewhere in the 1,000 ballpark. How do they have the infrastructure to support this bar and all these upgrades? Like, I know Frank said he came into money,
mm-hmm.
but you're not just going to sink all this money in if you're not making any of it back.
Well, I feel like, I don't know, coming from a small town, and it's like, usually there is a small town, but one bar could service like 6 plus small towns in the area.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately leads to a lot of drinking and driving, but you know, so then you have that kind of population that might be able to fill a bar like that.
The drinking and driving thing is well reflected in this movie, though, because I think everyone does.
Oh yeah, for sure. The other thing is, the movie is called Roadhouse. I don't know that they ever reference that term in the movie itself, but I always thought of a roadhouse as like a trucker bar.
Yeah.
So then you would have that type of clientele where it's, you know, it's kind of like a truck stop where you have people who are just like driving the roads that would just kind of like stop in for the night, and that would be the place that they would go.
Yeah, motorcycles parked out front and stuff.
Yeah.
I did read when I was doing my Googling, though, that there is a town of 12,000 that's only 13 miles away called Carthage.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess that's possible, but you'd think that the bar would be in the town of 12,000, not the town of 1,000.
Yeah. Unless Frank's goal is to kind of build the reputation of the bar and the name of the bar so much that he's going to attract people from the 12,000 looking for a new place to go.
He's going to revitalize Jasper.
Yeah.
He wants to be the new Brad Wesley.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's the good Brad Wesley.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, the look of him, though, the entire movie, I was expecting him to, like, have a slimy moment. I was expecting him to be the bad guy at some point.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that, too. I thought he was going to end up being in on it with Brad somehow.
Partnered, yeah. Yeah. But yes, this place is all fancy and classy now. The employees have uniforms. But it turns out the booze is running low because of Wesley controlling all their booze. Dalton has pissed off the wrong corrupt millionaire. But he says to the new barkeep, "Ernie, give me the phone. I'll take care of it." I'm pretty sure Ernie is the only person of color in this movie.
Yeah. I was trying to keep track. I don't think I saw another one.
But, I mean, it also strikes me as the type of movie where if we did have more, we'd be hearing the N-word a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. If there were more, there would need to be a real... We need to show that Dalton is not a racist person.
Yeah.
And he might just end up spending most of his time kicking, like, Klansman ass, so I don't know.
Yeah. But at the end of the night, Doc Elizabeth is waiting for Dalton. Meanwhile, some of Wesley's scumbags are watching the bar in the most conspicuous vehicle possible for a stakeout, their monster truck.
Yeah.
Well, Dalton doesn't seem to notice the giant fucking truck and takes the doctor back to his loft. And he's acting a little embarrassed of his home, trying to justify everything about it. It's quiet, but the horses let me know if anyone comes around. But no matter, she loves it! And then this scene just gets a little weird. Like, first Doc stares weirdly at Brad Wesley's house across the lake, which had me going, the fuck?
Yeah.
We also find out Red is her uncle. But then Dalton finds soft music on the radio. I always love how a slow song is conveniently starting from the beginning in movies like this. Like, when was the last time you turned on a radio at the perfect right moment for any song to be starting, let alone a soft song for a romantic moment?
But I mean, that's how you know it's meant to be, right?
That's right. I always seem to turn it on during commercials if I'm turning on the radio.
Yeah.
But then there's this weird slow pursuit happening around his place as they flirt. But, like, she's backing away the whole time, making him come across as a deviant sexual predator. Like, it's far from romantic vibes here. And then he catches up to her finally as she ends up against a wall. But then they sort of dance, and then there's this big will they won't they moment with kissing, because it's more just a lot of feeling each other up without actually kissing. Like, it's a weird love scene, because then before they even kiss, He's inner, you know. Like, for the first time of them being together to slip the sausage before actually kissing, like, it's just such a weird choice.
That's how Swayze does it.
That's how Swayze rolls. No one puts baby in a corner. But they end up fucking, and this ends up with Doc waking up in the middle of the night to find Dalton sitting naked on the roof of the barn, and we have a conversation about, you got to slow down, Dalton, you'll be crippled when you're older. Or she realizes she just fucked a vagrant and tries to get him to settle, because she asks him, where are you going to go, Dalton? You could stay if you wanted to. But he says, I don't think so. And they get down and dirty again right there on the roof. And Brad is watching them do it from across the lake. He's found quite an adventurous woman, because now they're like having public sex as well. Like, this is your first time together. Go Dalton.
I just realized that Dalton is the littlest hobo. Kind of just traveling the roads, going from roadhouse to roadhouse.
Town to town.
Cleaning up the place. Bringing order.
Maybe tomorrow he just might settle down, but until tomorrow he'll just keep moving on.
Yeah. someone should make a roadhouse trailer with the Littlest Hobo theme song. I don't have the skills, but if somebody wants to do that, please do.
It's either that, or you got to make a roadhouse thing that is done to the Incredible Hulk music from the old series. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. So next day at work, Cody cautions Dalton because he hears he's been seen with the doctor. And know who had a thing for Elizabeth Clay? Brad Wesley. As I hear it, she left town and he went nuts. Bum, bum, bum! The plot thickens!
How did she leave town, though? Isn't she in the town?
She left and came back.
Oh, she left and came back. Okay.
Yeah. There is some comment about she did work somewhere, like Kansas City or something.
Okay. But also, Brad, I was trying to figure out, did they date at some point? Because he seems a lot older than her.
Yeah. A little uncomfortably older. Yeah. I got that vibe, too.
Yeah.
I was definitely wondering, whether it was he was just obsessed with her or whether she actually, like, got with him. Like, I don't know if there was a line that tells whether they were actually dating. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So outside, Wade arrives on his motorcycle with no helmet, because he's cool like Swayze, too. He calls the place the Double Douche, which is fantastic in the Sam Elliott drawl. Double Douche. Well, the new liquor delivery that Dalton arranged has shown up. Was Wade an escort or something for this delivery? Or is it just coincidence that he came on the same day?
I think it's just coincidence, because when he does show up to kind of save the day, it doesn't seem like he was specifically there because of the booze. It just kind of seems like it's not really explained why he ends up coming.
Yeah, because he just takes off too.
It kind of just seemed like he came to visit.
Yeah. So Dalton is out back dealing with the delivery when more of Wesley's men show up, once again to cause trouble. They have come to stop this delivery. You know, put them back. This bar is closed for business. And then another witty setup from Dalton. Can I buy you guys a drink? And then they start throwing punches. Guess not. So it's time for yet another fight scene. Except Dalton is getting fucked up. But Wade comes to his rescue. And one of them says, do you want to fight, Dickless? And he says, I sure as hell ain't gonna show you my dick. Like, that one was a weird moment for me. There's one line that boggles my mind even more coming up.
Oh,
I'll get there. But yeah, this one was kind of like, huh? But together, Wade and Dalton win this fight. And after they scare off the bad guys, Dalton says, hey, I had it under control.
Mm-hmm.
This is now the scene where everyone that has come out to the back dock at this point is like, oh my god, that's Wade Garrett.
Yeah. Exactly.
Why are these bouncers rock stars? Like, what is this world? So Dalton takes Wade to meet the doctor, and they go for breakfast after hanging out all night. Just the three of them. I don't know who's driving. I don't know, was the doctor a designated driver all night? Like, I figured she was drinking, and then she has to work again in 2 hours. That's a malpractice suit waiting to happen.
It's the 80s.
Yeah. But plus dancing, as one does in a diner early in the morning. Doc excuses herself for the little girl's room, and we get a bit more insight into Dalton's backstory from Memphis. He's living in the past. And Wade says, "I can't believe you're still dragging that shit around with you. The girl never told you she was married, did she? And when a man sticks a gun in your face, you got two choices. You can die or you can kill the motherfucker." Oh shit! Dalton has a past! The doc, meanwhile, comes back from the bathroom and leaves to get a couple hours of sleep before her shift starts. And then that night at work, pandemonium breaks out when Red's auto parts is on fire. And then it explodes! And then they regroup at the bar where Brad Wesley is now in there and kind of gloating, and then makes the band play for this weird strip show with Denise, and Dalton is politely trying to get her off stage as she strips, and then she kisses him because, like, it's a weird scene.
Yeah.
And he says, "If you're going to have a pet, keep it on a leash." And then the strip show becomes Jimmy with a pool cue on the dance floor, like spinning it around like Donatello.
Yeah.
And trying to pick a fight. And so cue another bar fight breaking out as Brad Wesley just sits there all cool. The fight lines up with Jimmy versus Wade, with Wade getting his ass kicked. So Dalton steps in to save him now. And then Brad Wesley fires a gun to end all of this. And he and his boys leave. Like, it just...
Yeah.
This was another scene that it's like fight for fighting's sake.
Yeah, I thought the whole bow staff twirling thing was a bit gratuitous. It's like we really need to show that this is martial arts. Like, why couldn't they just have a good old fashioned like bare knuckle brawl?
Yeah. Well, and I noticed that no one pulls out brass knuckles in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
They go to knives before they go to like brass knuckles. You never see that cliche play out.
Yeah.
Next day, we see several prominent townsfolk at Red's house because Red is ready to leave town, and they're trying to convince him to stay, but he's convinced Wesley is winning this battle for the town, which is confirmed by cutting to him and his goons, and we see just how out of control he's getting because he gets his guys to drive a monster truck through a car dealership.
So good.
This is one hell of a personal grudge against Dalton and Elizabeth that this man has got. This is like kindergarten level jealousy that he's got going on, but he's got the money to make it like so much more destructive.
This is the one where I reached a new level of not understanding. Blowing up the store or whatever, I could understand how he got away with that because, you know, it'd be difficult to prove he did it.
Yeah.
But in this case, he's there. He's literally like right there.
Yeah.
Everyone would know that's his truck.
Yeah.
Multiple witnesses see him tell the person to drive the truck through the building and crush all these cars. Where are the police?
Yeah.
Are they that paid off?
Yeah. They must be. I do like the payoff though of the little joke of "I hope you have insurance," which he says to the dealership owner because that's what the dealership owner said to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we cut to Dalton shirtless and practicing some boxing in the barn, and Wade is trying to talk him into giving up the fight, and we've got lines like, "You taught me as much as I ever taught you," but Wade isn't sticking around, and he says, "I love you, Miho, I gotta go," and he's out of there. I did read that Miho means my son. That's what Miho means.
Mm.
Just for anyone that hasn't done the research that we did. After Wade leaves, the doctor shows up, and he tells her, "I'm only good at one thing. I never lose." When an explosion rocks the barn because Emmett's house explodes. Dalton jumps out of the window and runs to the house, which was a pretty daring jump out of that loft barn. Like, that was kind of impressive where he jumps out and onto the car and down.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets to Emmett's house, and he gets Emmett out of there just in the nick of time. He sees Jimmy, the bad guy, riding away on a motorbike with weird laughter, and Dalton chases after him and tackles him off his bike. and prepare to die. You are such an asshole. And we get another fist and kick fight, this time on the beach by the lake's edge. We really get to see some kicking, though. More than any of the other scenes, we really get to see Dalton kicking. And man, like, Patrick Swayze kicks like a dancer.
I know.
Like, it's a believable kickboxing that he does, but, like, you know that they look that good because he's a dancer.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the line that I love from Jimmy that just had me going, what? Where he says, he's got Dalton on the ropes. He's been kicking his ass. And he says, I used to fuck guys like you in prison. That's such a weird brag.
Yeah, that's so aggressive and disturbing and... I don't know.
I mean, is he just saying that Dalton is a pretty boy? Like, is that like really the intent of this line? Or did he literally actually fuck guys like him in prison? Like, it's just a weird brag.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I feel like there's more to that line.
Yeah.
And there's a certain context that would have played in the 80s that I'm not really getting now.
Yeah.
But when he said that line, I was like, there's something more to this. I just don't. fully grasp what it is at this point.
Well, even though Dalton is getting his ass kicked, he manages to get the upper hand, and uh-oh, Jimmy has a gun. He's just going to kill him the old-fashioned way. So Dalton does the logical thing and rips out Jimmy's fucking throat. And the doctor shows up to the aftermath. I like that she checks his pulse. He's missing a throat, but maybe he's still alive. She can do an emergency surgery right there on the water's edge.
I like that she just looks at him with disappointment.
Yeah.
Like, no fear, no, oh, we need to call the police, no concern, like, are you okay? You must be so upset about what you've just done, you've just killed somebody.
Yeah.
None of that, just like, ugh.
Disgusted. I can't believe and you. Storms off.
I can't believe you would do this. Look at you, you dirty boy.
And I mean, watching this for the first time, I'm sitting there going, like, where's the investigation? Like, there's going to be an investigation, right? Like, they're going to tie this back to him. And then at the end, I mean, we're kind of paid off for it, but
mm-hmm.
we realize that there probably wasn't an investigation.
No, his body's still floating in the lake.
That's right. Yeah, all Dalton sees at this point is fury, and he starts screaming for Wesley across the lake, you know, fuck you, I'm coming for you. And Wesley sees the dead body floating in the water. So it's the morning, and okay, what's up with this weird karate gi top that he wears? This is the second time he's worn it in this movie.
I don't know. This movie was meant to be like a martial arts western.
Yeah.
And they were just like, nah. We're just going to keep all the elements, but set it in this 1980s nightclub bar situation.
Yeah. One of the things I find funniest about this is the fact that there was a clause in the contract for Patrick Swayze for him to be able to keep his clothes from production.
Oh, really?
So he even got to keep this bizarre top. Anyway, in the morning, Dalton gets to the Double Deuce in time for the phone to be ringing, and it's Brad Wesley giving an ultimatum about which one do you want to die, Elizabeth or Wade? Supervillain level shit going on here, like Two-Face. And he says, I'll flip the coin, Dalton. I'd sure like to tell you how it turns out, and hangs up on him. But just then, Wade stumbles in, all beat up, and he says, there were only three of them. They said I was lucky. Oh, shit! He's got to go find Doc. Wesley wins, man. We're out of here. You know, have a beer. I'll be back. And he's going to regret making Wade stay behind in a couple minutes, though. Dalton goes to see Elizabeth, and he says, get your things. We're out of here. And she says, I'm not going anywhere with you. Oh, yes, you are, he says, as he tries to force her out of the room.
Yeah.
But he insists they got to go because the man is crazy. And she says, and you're not? Now get out of here. So, empty-handed from his abduction attempt, Dalton gets back to the bar to find Wade lying on the bar, and he just thinks that he's passed out, which, okay, have you seen Wade do this before then, passing out on a bar? Like, is this normal behavior for Wade that you would think that?
Mm-hmm.
But he's not passed out, he's been murdered, and there is a note attached to a knife that says, It was Tails. Oh, that's fucking cold, bro. So Dalton goes to pull the knife out of his chest, and I'm sitting there thinking, don't touch the knife handle, you idiot. You'll put your fingerprints on it for the investigation that's apparently never going to happen. But he storms out of there, gets back in his car, and peels out of there. We cut to Wesley's idiot goons. One of them is scratching his back with a shotgun. Like, I had to laugh at how stupid these goons get at one point. But then we see the Mercedes driving towards Wesley's house, and all the goons start firing at the car, which flips and gloriously explodes from a shotgun blast while in midair. Go figure, there was actually no one inside. He had the gas pinned down with the knife that he just took out of his friend, which is perfectly clean now, by the way. And it's kind of funny that he also has a coin attached to the base of that knife that is on Tails.
Hmm.
So that his line later on that says, it came up Tails for me too, or whatever he says, he has the coin right there attached to the knife. While I'm watching it, I could see the stunt driver. Like, they did a pretty good job of blacking him out, but I could see his hands on the steering wheel. And so it's like, I was not fooled by the movie magic in this moment of the empty car. So the car is empty. They have to find the prick. So this one-man army takes out henchmen off-screen. Like, there's some really weird cuts here. How did those guys get where they were to be taken out?
Yeah.
But then I read that the original cut of this movie was like 3.5 hours.
What?
That might be why it seems so choppy. Yeah, the original cut came in at 3.5 hours, and they're like, yeah, no. No.
Yeah, I thought that as well, watching that scene, because it's not really clear how Dalton is making his way through the house.
Yeah.
You just kind of see other people who are about to be killed finding people who are already dead.
Yeah. We get one guy that had the shotgun, and he gets disarmed, and then another knife fight, and knife guy gets stabbed, and then a second guy on the balcony with a shotgun gets the knife thrown at him and tumbles over the balcony dead. All that's left is Brad Wesley. Oh, and the big fat guy that he crushes with a polar bear taxidermy. with another line that makes me go, huh? Where it's, you were made for each other, is what he says about the guy getting crushed by the polar bear. But yeah, now it's down to Dalton and Brad Wesley. And I see you found my trophy room, Dalton. The only thing that's missing is your ass. What? I used to fuck guys like you in prison.
The funny thing is, I feel like he would actually do it if he killed Dalton. I could just see him have like a framed like ass taxidermied
hanging above his fireplace.
Yeah.
But this town is big enough for both of us. Let's talk about this. But luckily, Wesley has a big bucket of African spears, as one does in his trophy room, and starts chucking some of them at Dalton. How is this guy any kind of match for Dalton? Like, this guy, like we already mentioned, he looks so old.
Yeah, no.
Like, but he's holding his own. How? He does not look like... Yeah. Like, he looks like the kind of guy that paid for those stuffed animals or paid for someone to shoot those animals for him. And he just
he just
walked behind with a rifle to look important.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, he's not the type of guy who could hold his own for sure.
Yeah.
He's just the type of guy who has the money to pay for people to do everything for him.
Yeah.
Once he loses his gun, he should just kind of be at the mercy of Dalton.
But he holds his own and, like, is actually getting in some good shots, too. Like, slashing Dalton up a bit more. So they fight for a bit, trashing the trophy room, and eventually Dalton has Wesley pinned, but he hesitates. Was he going to rip this guy's throat out as well?
Yeah, like, the way I took it is, like, Dalton, he's like Wolverine. He gets in a berserker rage that always ends with him ripping somebody's throat out, and then it was like...
That's his Mortal Kombat finishing move.
Yeah, it was like... When he's in a fight, his hands are what control him, and the hand thirsts for throat, and the disappointment of the doctor warmed
showing his, up at this moment, yeah,
warmed his cold heart and caused him to set aside his throat lust and choose another way.
Yes, she does show up at this moment. He has a change of heart about committing another homicide. And this hesitation gets us a classic bad guy pop-up. But then in the nick of time, the local business owners show up with guns to rescue Dalton. And they all take their turn shooting Brad Wesley and contributing to his death.
With some of the worst blood pack explosions I've ever seen in my entire
life. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some of those were not tied down.
Yeah.
And, of course, they have the line, "This is our town. Don't you forget it." Oh, and the big fat guy under the polar bear is not dead. So as the sheriff shows up, all these town folk who showed up have collected their guns and hidden them. And the sheriff says, "All right, who's going to tell me what the hell happened here?" And everyone is playing dumb. "Did you see anything?" "Nope." "You see anything?" "Nope." And finally, they ask polar bear guy, "You see anything, Tigger?" And he says, "A polar bear fell on me." And then everything is just okay with the world. We get a happy ending with Skinny dipping in the pond, and then Jeff Healey playing the credits. The end.
You have to appreciate, before you finish up here, you have to appreciate that the why is this the one instance where the sheriff shows up, like, ready to do some law enforcement?
Yeah.
And then he's just like, "Where were you with the monster truck? Where have you been for all these explosions? Where were you when the guy got murdered by the lake?"
Yeah. Yeah. I did read though that there was a basis in an actual event that happened where it was a town that took the law into their own hands and they played dumb just like these guys did at the end. So
nice.
But that is Roadhouse. So Colin, on IMDb it scored 6.6 out of 10. Has a Metascore of 36 on Rotten Tomatoes. It has a 39 on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 66%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a roundhouse kick to the face. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, let's go to... I'm going to the audience of Rotten Tomatoes for these ones. So I picked one negative review just because I thought it was kind of funny. So Myopic M gives the movie 1 out of 5 stars. He says, "Written as a soap opera made for 13-year-old boys turned into a cartoon, then back into a live-action film, apparently as a last-minute decision. The dialogue has the predictability of an 80s He-Man episode. The unmerited looks of disdain amongst the male cast at one another are what I would expect from a middle school cafeteria. If your thumbs are tired from shooter video games and you have no date tonight, then sure, this film can pass the time and kill your brain cells as good as anything."
Is the history of that actually true? Was it originally going to be a cartoon at some point?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that's just how his take on it.
I can see how it's like a cartoon come to life. Yes, I can see that. But like, he seems so confident in his explanation of the history of this movie.
Yeah. All right, next one comes from EC, gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars. "This film truly is a cult classic and is one of my favorite films of all time. The action in this film is great, especially the scenes that take place at the drinking bars. Patrick Swayze does a fantastic job in this film." And here's my favorite part of this review. He says, "This is my favorite film that came out in 1989. Great film."
Okay.
I don't know about you. I don't rank my... I couldn't look back at every year and be like, "Oh, that was my favorite movie of 2006.
Yeah. Drinking bar. I'm still having trouble getting past drinking bar.
Drinking bar, yeah.
Please explain that one to me, EC. Are you spending all your time in oxygen bars?
The next one comes from Matt D. 2 out of 5 stars. He says, "Watch this for the first time during quarantine, and boy is this movie weird." So Swayze gets hired to swoop in and remake a bar like Gordon Ramsay on Kitchen Nightmares, even though his skills seem limited, to telling staff to, quote-unquote, be nice and knowing some martial arts. Said bar gets the transformation almost instantly, and then the rest of the movie is about fighting the town's rich guy and his thugs. I'll award 2 stars for Sam Elliott's hair.
He did have good hair. I'll give him that.
And then this last one is from John Logan B. 5 out of 5 stars. He says, "This movie cured my depression. A twisted tale that denies all expectations going into it. A story rich with action and breathtaking character development that will have you leaving the theater speechless."
Alrighty. Well, yeah, 66% and 6.6 from audiences, and then 39 and 36 from critics. Where does it fall for you?
I feel like I should just preface this by saying that I fully expected to hate this movie.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't think I was gonna like it at all, but I actually really loved it. I thought it was so mindless and nonsensical, but just that's exactly what you needed it to be.
Yeah.
I feel like you don't get movies like that anymore.
No.
That just do this movie, kind of like I said before, it just does all the cool stuff without thinking about whether or not it makes sense or not. And
unapologetic. Yeah.
Yeah. And I appreciate that about this movie. So I would give it a 65% for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I mean, I read that this movie is listed among the 100 most enjoyably bad movies ever made in the official Razzie movie guide. I don't know what its actual ranking is. I didn't dive that deep, but that sums up kind of how I felt about this movie. It's enjoyably bad.
Yeah.
Like, this movie, Roadhouse, is terrible.
Yeah.
But I loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
I almost want that 3.5 hour cut now to see all the terrible goodness that I missed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I can get behind both of those scores.
Yeah.
Like, I can look at it and go, I understand why it's in the mid-30s for critics.
Yeah, for sure. Critically, it's objectively terrible.
Yeah.
There's the cinematography's not great, the acting is not great. Although, I mean,
Jeff Healey, Sammy Elliott, I want to give props to Jeff Healey, though, as, like, one of his only acting roles. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the movie for me is Sam Elliott. I love his character. Yeah. And I just loved seeing him. I understand why people tease such a cool, like, Swayze is cool in this movie. But Sam, you can, when Dalton talks about, like, Wade Garrett being the best, when Sam Elliott shows up on screen, you're like, yeah, he is the best.
Yeah.
Dalton is awesome, but Wade is the best.
Yeah. Well, and they're both very cool, but for very different reasons. It would be like Happy Days having two Fonzes.
Yeah.
But they're different kinds of cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And yeah, that's exactly how this is they're both, it's almost too much cool for this movie.
Yeah.
Is having these two on screen at the same time. Like that scene in the diner where he's openly hitting on Dalton's woman in front of him, but there's still this cool trust between them, and they know that it's not serious. But like, you look at her and it's like, I could see her going home with either of them.
Yeah, for sure.
Or both of them. They are both cool for so many different reasons. Maybe you guys need to try a throuple here, because like, you know,
yeah.
If she can hook both of those guys, like I would have taken one of them home.
Yeah. That's what I thought. I was like, when I saw Wade show up, like, even my wife said, she was like, because we both watched The Ranch, and I was like, oh, do you recognize that guy? And she's like, no. And I was like, oh, that's Bo from The Ranch. And she's like, what? She's like, he's hot. And I was like, yeah, he is hot.
Yeah, I'm sitting there going, wait, am I gay now? because damn, Sam Elliott.
Yeah, I was almost like, as soon as he came on, I was like, this is the movie. I like, forget this story. Like, Roadhouse should have been about Wade.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That is Roadhouse, and that's our show for this week. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is tell the world. Word of mouth is really important for a podcast. Or if you want to go above and beyond with telling the world, Go on whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars. It doesn't matter what you say, but it's those 5 stars that drive us up the charts and they help us get noticed.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iusedtolikethisone.com. There you can find links to all our podcast episodes as well as our social media. We have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have Instagram. Please go on all our social medias, like, comment, subscribe, follow us, let us know what you think about the podcast. Share any funny memes you have, Sean, or you could also just check out all Sean's funny memes that he puts up there, but it's a good time. We'd love to have people be a part of our community, so go check out our social media and join us for the ride.
And if you would like to be a producer of the show and donate to us, oh, you can go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon community. We are still trying to get to 10 new Patreon members so that Colin and I will watch Lavalantula and tell you what we think about it for a private Patreon show. So if you liked what we did here in this episode, having never seen the movie before, well, that's what you might end up getting out of us watching Lavalantula, and I can almost guarantee it's probably just as terrible as Roadhouse, and just as fantastic at the same time. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals, as well as he's got 2 solo songs out now. Anywhere you listen to music, thanks for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on... I Used to Like This One.